accession number 4666, reel 5.
Lord Gridley, reel 5. That does lead on to another interesting subject, namely the subject of money. Was it possible to get money on the camp?
I'll explain this as quickly as I can. There were people who, I don't know when I said this before, but there were people who brought sums of money into the camp, and they handed over to the camp committee. In addition, when the Right Reverend J.L. Wilson was interned, he brought a very large sum of money in with him, and that helped the camp finances. We obviously were. Now, I was being very careful about this because I can't remember it now, but I think there must have been a system in force whereby we were given a certain amount of money to make purchases, particularly near the end. But I can't recollect it with any definite statement at this time. At the end, the Japanese were very concerned and worried about people other than ourselves who had been interned, with the result that quite a large number of the local population came in, including Jews. And our Jewish friends, as I may speak about them, they're very ingenious at the way how one is to exist under various circumstances. So bartering started up, particularly near the end. If one had an old typewriter or something like that, one was able to flog this for a sum of money, particularly to these our Jewish friends. Gold, if one had come in with a gold ring or a signet ring like that, managed to maintain it, and the Japanese didn't take these things off us, one would part with that for a sum of money. And it's obvious that by the system that was started up towards the end, that there must have been, one must have been able to use that to make purchases of food and luxuries. Well, not luxuries, but something which would obviate the awful dullness of the sort of routine food that we ate.
What form of currency was used?
What, maybe a pardon?
What form of currency?
Oh, it was the Japanese spurious, the Japanese dollar note. As soon as the Japanese took over the country, they said that they withdrew, they put out of circulation the Straits dollar, valid dollar note used in the country, and used their own money. They had their own money printed with in Japanese, and that was appropriate tender in the country at that time.
If you had nothing to sell, was there any other way of getting money?
I don't think so, but most people had something of value. They didn't realize it until the Jews came in, but they certainly realized it then. Mm. Everybody had something. I had some binoculars, which the Japanese were very angry about when I first obtained, which I picked up in the street in the fall of Singapore, and I took them in. And they let me have them, and some I flogged that for about 50 Japanese dollar notes, you know.
And where could you use the money that once you'd acquired it?
Well, then we obviously must have been used it to get extras, a little of the niceties of life in the way of food.
Yes, but how?
From the camp shop, which was established, and also. If I may say this now, I know this to be true, but I never saw it myself. When Wilson came in, it was possible to bribe the Japanese guards very extensively with regard to getting food in, which was not really officially allowed, to improve our rations. This money was therefore smuggled in through the good offices of Wilson and used, not with the knowledge of most of the internees, not with the knowledge of the internees so much as knowledge of some of us who are running the camp, to improve our ration. And so that's it may give you some explanation of how money was used.
Was it basically an individual purchase system, or was the money used communally?
The money was used on certain very limited circumstances of people purchasing individually, but 90% of the cases when that money was used to supplement the rations, the very poor rations, and also by bribing the Japanese guards to let the food in.
So if you had a gold ring and sold it, the results of that sale you would spend communally or on yourself?
No, you'd do that on yourself, and that was considered fair enough.
Now, I imagine a morale on camp must have varied throughout the period you were in Changi, but on the whole, what kind of things got you down?
I think what got me down, and I can say it with experience, especially in the early, first couple of years, and one couldn't see the end of it, and one never knew when one was going to get out. One Christmas went by, and then another Christmas, and then another Christmas. I think that was the most depressing feeling that one had during the whole of the period that one was interned. What kept our spirits up, as I already described, was the news, as the war improved in our favour. The other matter which worried us was the fact that we had no communication with our wives or parents, and it was only in the last year that the Japanese recognised the International Red Cross, and we were cut off for the first 3 years without any knowledge of whether some wives have supposed to have got away, some men didn't know their wives were dead, they knew nothing about their children, they didn't even know whether their wives were all right, were able to fend for themselves.
Mm. Was morale, keeping it up, much of a problem?
It never was with me.
But generally, for internees as a whole?
I think, can I say this? If you look at the people who went down and suffered most, they were the people between 18 and 24. The people who seemed to survive and ride out all the storms and keep cheerful were in the age group about 28 to 36. And the people at the other end of the scale, the 40s to the 50s, where the people that one was anxious about and wondered whether they would crack up under the business of having lost their freedom, under the appalling conditions under which they were housed and the lack of good food. Basically, I remember this because it was of interest to me.
You mentioned some who did crack up. Do you know what the causes of those suicides were?
People are cracked up, people you never would have expected to crack up.
Give me an example.
Well, I mean, a doctor, I said, who committed suicide. He was a very cheerful sort of fellow normally, and he just did himself in the camp hospital. Other people who got depressed or cracked up.
Dr. Inhofe.
We'll talk about, you asked me about how people crack up, or if they did crack up under the circumstances under which we were detained and so on. I think one has to remember that as far as we were concerned, we try to keep cheerful. It's much easier to keep cheerful and optimistic if you're in a crowd, as we were. In fact, we were overcrowded. And that may sound a funny thing to say, but I'm trying to contrast that with people that I know who were given solitary confinement. If you are removed from your fellow beings in those sort of circumstances, you have time to think about your situation. There's nobody you can talk to. And you're under a far greater mental and physical strain. We learnt, associated together as we were, that we must be cheerful, and it would be by our own efforts alone whether we came through this. Through this situation that we were in, and it was far easier to do that in a crowd, as I say, rather than being isolated and given. And I think we came out of it very well.
What sort of efforts did you make to maintain morale specifically?
I don't think it was a conscious effort so much as it was an effort that one realised one had to pull oneself together in the circumstances in which one found oneself, and realise that. That if one wanted to come out of it at the end, this is what one would have to do. And I must sort of be fair about this. I mean, our worst conditions were the first 2 years, and they gradually improved in the circumstances which I have described to you. as the war went on, and we got better news, and our rations improved and so on. And we knew that the Japanese were really being hit hard in the Pacific. This made us all the more determined, weak as we were at the time, to hang on, because the day was coming.
Yes. I believe you said that towards the end of the war, you actually changed camp. You moved.
Yes, we did. Yes.
What was the new place like? How did it compare with the old?
Well, this is again. Can I just explain why that happened? The Japanese considered that, they considered first of all that we were more dangerous than the actual combatant fighting them in the war, and therefore we, who had been associated with the local population, must go to a jail and more or less be locked up there. Towards the end of the war, when Slim was advancing down Burma and they were anticipating a landing by Mountbatten on the coast of Malaya, they were very worried about their prisoners of war who were in open camps. Syme Road was the camp in which they kept the prisoners of war. So they then decided to move the prisoners of war from Syme Road camp, prisoners of war camp, and take us out of the jail and put us there and bring the prisoners of war into the jail. And that was in about the last 6 months. So we were in Syme Road for about 6 months before the end.
So POWs were moved into Changi.
That's right.
And you were moved into a prison.
No, moved into their camp, into the prisoners of war. They were in Syme Road, the prisoners of war, in turn what's known as prisoners of war camp,
yes,
which is an open camp. Okay? And we were taken from Changi jail, put in there, and they were put
into
jail.
How did conditions in the Syme Road camp compare with those you were used to in Changi?
We were then in Attap huts.
Sorry?
We were then in Attap huts. You know what that is,
no.
No, you don't. Well, they're in open huts which are roofed with, what in the hell are they called? Palm tree, dried palm leaves, known as the Attap, A-T-T-A-P, Attap. Very much more airy, of course. They had been used for the accommodation of troops in the early stages. What the Japanese had done was to get an army camp and put barbed wire all round it, and put the prisoners of war inside that. Now, we went into those conditions. We were taken out of the jail, and we were put into the conditions which the prisoners of war in Singapore had been accommodated.
Were they better?
Much better.
In what ways?
Well, I think you had a circulation of air. You were enclosed in the
yes,
jail.
Yes, anything else?
And yes, you had more freedom to move around. You had more space. I told you that we were put in, each cell was designed to hold one convict, and three of us were put in one cell. That was the billeting accommodation in Changi Jail. Therefore, we were much better off. Our spirits, of course, improved enormously.
When did you first begin to think that liberation was a real possibility?
It's difficult to remember the exact moment, but through the medium of our receiving sets, which we had working all the time, we were in pretty close touch with what was happening. We heard of VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, and after that, that all the main onslaught would be turned against the Japanese. I think we were on tenterhooks for probably 2 or 3 months in Syme Road, expecting the end at any moment. And when we did hear of the end was that when the bombs had been dropped on Hiroshima, was it? Hiroshima, I think it was where the first bombs dropped. And Japanese guards began to be very slack and not really worry much about us. We were left for our own devices, you know.
What do you personally remember about the actual event of liberation? How did it occur for you?
I never felt more elated in my life. I've never had the same sort of feeling of elation. I felt that we were then top of the world. It's the most extraordinary feeling. And Mountbatten came in, and Lady Mountbatten came into the camp within about 2 days of liberation of source. I don't know whether you want to let... She came, she arrived. They sent a band in, we'd never heard of a band, and they played Begin the Begin, which I always remember, and that was the first tune I'd ever heard. Mm. And they played that tune, which was a marvellous tune for us to hear, a military band. We were very sick for a bit because they gave us too much to eat. And they realised that although we could have Red Cross rations, that our stomachs wouldn't take it. Remember, we'd had no butter for 4 years. We'd had no sugar. Our stomachs had...
Contracted.
Contracted, yes. The opposite of distended, just contracted very markedly. People were very sick when they overate some of these rations, and the doctors stopped that.
Yes. After 4 years of imprisonment, did you find freedom difficult to cope with in any other ways?
Only with women.
Explain.
Did I find... Yes, I did. I found that I got an awful headache for a start. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't concentrate. And everything... it's a very interesting question, this, because I really would like to answer it as best I can. You know, we'd really been animals for 4 years. We had no worries. I mean, we had no bank accounts, no overdrafts. None of the responsibilities of civilization to look after. We were just there. And by the grace of God, we were lucky if we were fed, you know. And none of the problems of the modern world were inflicted upon us. And the brain gets very interesting. The brain has a marvellous rest, in a sense. You are there, and you're being... Well, because we weren't looked after, but you are there, and you're on your own devices, and none of the problems impinging upon you. Very little to think about. I don't know whether I'm an extraordinary being, but this was what happened to me, and it was really rather a delightful sensation in some respects, feeling like that.
Life became so simple.
So simple. So simple. Of course, one worried a bit, but I mean, you see, the point was worrying didn't get you anywhere. And yes. I think I'm a person who can... very fortunately, throw worries to one side. If I can't tackle it, well, then that's not the slightest bit of use worrying about it. I mean, we were there. Anyway, you asked me what it was like when I came out. Well, it was. It was very difficult for a bit. I wonder whether the old brain was really going to function properly.
So some kinds of adjustments were
necessary. Yes, it was necessary, yes.
Can you think of anything you found difficult to cope with, specifically?
To take anything in and understand what it really meant. That was one basic problem, to rationalise, to think a problem out to its logical conclusion. I found that exceedingly difficult.
That's interesting. Did you find that the 4 years had any longer-term effect on you as regards your attitudes or your philosophy?
Had a hell of a difference, yeah.
What kind? In what ways?
Well, I suppose we really ran ourselves like a lot of communists in that camp. And I got to appreciate my fellow... It was a wonderful education. I got to appreciate my fellow men far more than I'd ever given them tolerance for in the past. What else? What did I appreciate about them? It was a great leveller, that experience. I was interned with governors, high commissioners... big business people who had been on a pinnacle of power and position in Malaysia. They were all demoted to the communist coolie. And it was a funny thing that they were the people who I had to order about. I mean, I wasn't in that position. I was quite a young cadet when I was out there. But it was funny, the people in the camp who came to the top. And those people descended to the ordinary menial tasks. And, I mean, you'd get them up and tell them they got to do this and they got to do that. Now, I didn't do it in any superior way, but it showed to me, really, that basically we were all at a common level.
What it suggests to me is that the skills that became important had changed, and that people might have been able to run a great big business concern in Malaya, but this didn't actually have much value necessarily when you were in the camp.
Very right. It's very true what you say. You summed it up better than I did.
What kind of skills seemed? What kind of skills do you think? What kind of talents? What kind of skills do you think became more important in the Changi situation?
I think a fairly tough Victorian upbringing that I had, which saw me through, and that was to believe implicitly in my country and my king and the right of Britain and everything that it did. Plus the fact that for the whole of my time, my father was in politics. He wrote to me every week when I was in Malaya over 25 years. And therefore, portrayed before me was all the history of our country and everything that was going on. And I think basically if you had that, and you had the will to live and that kind of thing, I can't understand why I came up. You see, it's very difficult. I've got to sort of look at this in the context of myself and say to myself, well, how does it come about that I should rise up and have some authority in the camp?
I asked you about your attitude, so this may be an entire and utter figment of my imagination, but I have a sense that you retain a certain sort of residual bitterness against the Japanese.
That's not entirely true. I don't think I have got a bitterness against them. In fact, I'm doing business with them now.
What is true?
And I find them very honourable, very straightforward at the present day circumstances, and I don't hold a tremendous amount of resentment against them. No, I think I've got enough sense, and I sensed it at the time, to realise the system under which they were brought up was entirely different to the system which we understood a political system to be in Great Britain. And when I say that, I mean they were brought up with some of the virtues which perhaps we had, but rather in a different way. They realised that the finest thing any of them could do was to die for the Emperor of Japan. I mean, there's no doubt about that. They were very strict disciplinarians with their own forces. They were scrupulously clean. In fact, I wish some of them would come to England today and beat up some of our people on the streets for the litter they live around the place. I mean, they beat us up in the camp because when we got the first issue of cigarettes, people stuck the stumps down. And the way they dealt with that is they made them tie a string around their neck with an empty tin of cigarettes and put the ashes in there.
So what you're saying is that with the understanding, you've forgiven and forgotten?
I've forgiven and forgotten, honestly, I have. Whether those people who were tortured so terribly, as some of my friends were, could ever forgive them, I simply don't know. Mm.